Old Moses thought about it and then smiled as he nodded acceptance, saying, "Yes, yes, that is a good suggestion, Rabbi. I will accept your advice, and your son, if he will, shall recite the Kaddish as if he were mine own son." The old man stopped and there was silence in the room for a few moments until he spoke again. "Rabbi," he said, "this author, Rampa, do you know about him? Have you read any of his books? Mine son say that many Catholics have been forbidden to read his books. What are they about?" The rabbi laughed and replied, "I have brought one of them for you, my friend. It tells much about death. It gives one great encouragement. I will ask you to read it. It will give you peace of mind. I have recommended it to many, many people, and yes, I know about him. He is a man who writes the truth. He is a man who has been persecuted by the press, or more accurately by the media. There was quite a little plot about it some years ago. Some of the newspapers claimed that he was the son of a plumber, but to my own knowledge, to my own definite knowledge, I know that to be untrue. But I do not understand their point of view. What is there to be ashamed of in being the son of a plumber if he had been, that is, their savior, Christ, was the son of a carpenter, we are told, and then many of the saints of the Catholics came from very humble beginnings. One of their saints, Saint Anthony, was the son of a swineherd. Some of the saints have been robbers who have been converted. Oh no, the man tells the truth. As rabbi, I get to hear a lot, I get many letters, and yes, the man is true, but he got into bad odor with a group of people and has been persecuted ever since, and none of the media had ever offered him an opportunity of explaining his own side of the question. But why does he have to explain anything? Asked old Moses. If he has been framed, as is so often the case, why couldn't he do anything about it at the time? Why bother now? The rabbi looked sad and said, "The man was in bed with coronary thrombosis when the press people descended in quantities on his place of abode. It was thought he was going to die, and the press became even more virulent as there was no one to dispute their story. But enough of that now, we have to deal with you. I will go and talk to my son." The days went on. 3 days, 4 days, 5 days, and on the fifth day Hoagie went into his father's room. His father was leaning back against the pillows, his eyes were half open, his mouth was gaping wide, his jaw sagging upon his chest. Hoagie rushed to his father and then hastily went to the door and called his mother. The funeral of Moses Makogwaska was modest, quiet, peaceful. Eventually, after 3 weeks, Hoagie went back to college and finished his instruction so that he could take over his father's business. Chapter 8, Hoagie Makogwaska jerked back to awareness of the present with a start. Guiltily he looked up. How much time had he wasted? Well, time did not matter while he had this awful angina pain. He sat there holding his chest and wondering if he was going the same way as his father. The door opened stealthily. Hoagie looked up with astonishment. What was it now? Was it a robber comes to steal from him? Why the stealth? The door opened a little more and cautiously, cautiously half a face appeared around the edge of the door, and one eye looked at him, his secretary. Seeing that he was watching her, she came into the room blushing. "Oh, Mr. Hoagie," she said, "I was so worried about you. I came in twice before and I could not get any attention from you. I was just going to phone the doctor for you. I hope you didn't think I was spying on you." Hoagie smiled gently at her and said, "No, no, my dear, I know you wouldn't spy, and I am upset that I have caused you such concern." He looked at her expectantly and raised his eyebrows in a good old Jewish symbol of interrogation. "Well?" he asked, "you want to ask me something, maybe?" The secretary looked at him with some concern and then said, "Mr. Hoagie, during the past few days others on the staff as well as I have noticed that you have a considerable amount of pain. Can't you go and get a good medical checkup, Mr. Hoagie?" "I have had a very good checkup and I am suffering from angina pectoris. That is a heart condition, you know, and eventually I suppose I shall have to give up being president if I live long enough, that is. And so I am going to decide who I can appoint in my place. Perhaps we should call a special board meeting for tomorrow afternoon. Will you notify the board members?" The secretary nodded in affirmation, and then said, "Oh, Mr. Hoagie, I do hope everything will be all right. Do you think I should call Mrs. McCogwaska and tell her you are coming home?"
"Oh no, oh no," said Hoagie. "My wife is worried enough about me as it is now, but I think you'd better call my chauffeur and tell him to bring the car around. Meantime, I'll just wander down and stand in the lobby waiting for him. Tell him to come inside as soon as he arrives."
Leisurely, Hoagie glanced through some of his papers and on an impulse picked them up and bundled them into his open safe. He looked at his watch and he looked about him, then he closed and locked the safe. He looked in the drawers of his desk, then he closed them and locked each one, after which he wandered out and down the stairs. Hoagie lived in one of the new suburbs, about 18 miles from his office. It was a long and newly developed area. Hoagie looked with astonishment at all the building going on. He had never taken time to look at it before. On the way to the office and on the way back from the office, he had always had his head buried in important papers. But now for the very first time he looked out of the windows and saw the life going on about him, and he thought to himself, "Well, I suppose soon I'll be dead like my father and the world will go on without me."
"Oh, Hoagie, Hoagie, I think I'd better call for the doctor," exclaimed Mrs. McCogwaska.
"I'll call him now. I think we'd better have Dr. Robbins. He knows you better than anyone else." She bustled away and soon had the doctor's secretary on the phone. First, in the well-known way of the doctor's secretary, the woman was very aloof and very dictatorial with much of, "Oh, Dr. Robbins is so busy, your husband will have to come to the office." But Mrs. McCogwaska knew how to deal with people like that, saying, "Oh well, miss, if you can't take a sensible message, I'll get in touch with the doctor's wife. I am a personal friend of the family." Hoagie sat down to a small meal and picked at the food listlessly. He had no heart for a good meal now. He did not feel so well, and he thought that if he had a good meal, it might place a strain upon his heart. "Well, I think I'll go to bed," he said as he got up from his place at the table. "I expect Dr. Robbins will be along in 2 or 3 hours. Strange about these medical boys, isn't it? They seem to have no sympathy for their patients' worries nowadays. All they want is to play golf and see the checks roll in." So saying, he turned about and walked slowly and laboriously to the staircase. In the bedroom, he went through his pockets, put his loose change on the bed table beside him, and then carefully folded his clothes and donning a clean pair of pajamas, he was expecting the doctor. He got into bed. For a time he lay back just thinking how almost exactly his experience paralleled that of his deceased father. "Holy Mary, Mother of God," intoned Hoagie, "be with us now and in the hour of our death." Just at that moment there was the distant tinkling of a bell and hurrying footsteps. There came the sound of the opening door and low-voiced conversation, then the maid came running up the stairs.
"The doctor is coming, sir."
"Shall I show him up?" she asked.
"Eh?
Oh. Yes, do please, show him up now." The doctor came in and after a short greeting pulled a stethoscope out of his pocket and carefully sounded Hoagie's chest.
"Yes, Mr. McCogwaska," said the doctor, "you have quite an attack again. Never mind, we'll pull you through as we have done before. Just take things easy." He sat down on the bed and once again told Hoagie that it was a big symptom of angina that the patient was sure he was going to die.
"Well," he said, "all people have to die in time, even the doctors. It's not a case of the doctor being able to heal himself. We all have to die, and I have seen a very great number of people die. But I am sure your time is not yet." He paused and pursed his lips, and then went on, "It would be better if you had a day nurse and a night nurse. I think it might reassure you and reassure your wife, who really is most concerned needlessly, I may add, at your condition. Would you like me to arrange for nurses?"
"Ah, doctor," said Hoagie, "I think you will be the best one to arrange for the nurses. Probably you will want the same arrangement as my father had, 2 nurses by day and 1 nurse by night."
"Yes, I shall appreciate it if you will arrange it." Later, a nurse came up the stairs and walked into Hoagie's bedroom. He looked at her in dismay. "A real frump," he thought. "Why couldn't I have a glamour puss for a change?" Still,
The nurse was efficient. She straightened up his room, turned everything about so that poor Hoagy did not know if he was on his head or on his feet. Always the same trouble with women. He thought to himself, they get busy in a room and they upset everything so a poor fellow can't find a thing anymore. Well, one of the penalties of being ill, I suppose, I'd better put up with it. The night was very unpleasant. Hoagy had pains and medicine and more pains, and it seemed an eternity before the first faint streaks of light came seeping in through the slats of the Venetian blind. Hoagy thought that probably he had never had a worse night in his life, and as soon as his wife came in he said, I think I'll see the father today, I'll have a talk with him. I think I might have a confession with him. His wife went downstairs and picked up the telephone to dial the number of the Roman Catholic priest. There was a lot of lugubrious talk from Mrs. McCogwaska, and then he heard her say, oh, I am so glad, father, I am so very glad, I am sure my husband will be delighted that you will be able to come and see him. After tea that same day the priest came. Hoagy sent the nurse out and he and the priest had a talk. I assure you, Mr. McCogwaska, said the priest, that you have been an extremely good Catholic, and when the time does come for you to pass over you will undoubtedly go straight to heaven. You have done much good for the church and I will add my prayers to yours. He sank to his knees in the middle of the bedroom and said in doleful tones, shall we pray together? Hoagy signaled his assent. He always found these things rather embarrassing. He thought of his father, a good old Jew, and never ashamed to admit it, and he thought that after all he was a renegade from his own faith. He had read somewhere that one should not change one's religion without very, very good cause, and he did not think it was a very good cause if one changed a religion just because of social status. That night Hoagy lay awake for a long time, just thinking. The pain was definitely much better, but still he did not feel as well as he should. There seemed to be a peculiar hollow feeling with his heart, and at times he had the most astonishing impression that his heart was, well, he called it beating backwards. But he lay in bed in the darkness gazing out upon the night sky, gazing out across the trees just close to his bedroom window. He marveled at the ways of life, he marveled at the ways of religion. The teachings that had been given to him were that unless he embraced the teachings of Jesus Christ he had no chance whatever of going to heaven. He wondered what had happened to all the souls who had lived on the earth for the thousands of years before Christianity. He thought of all the millions of people on the earth who were not Christians, what had happened to them, he wondered. Was there any truth in the teaching that unless one was a Catholic one could not go to heaven? So thinking he sank into a deep, untroubled sleep. For the next few days Hoagy seemed to improve enormously. The doctor was highly satisfied with his condition, highly satisfied with the progress he was making. Well, Mr. McCogwaska, said Dr. Robbins, I'll soon have you out of that bed, soon you will be able to go away for a very, very necessary vacation. Have you decided where you're going? Hoagy had thought quite a bit about it, but no, he couldn't quite decide. Where should he go? Actually he did not want to go anywhere, he felt tired, tired all the time. The pain was less, but he could not explain why. He just did not feel right. There seemed to be something nagging away inside his chest. But the doctor said he was getting better, the nurses said he was getting better, and his wife said he was getting better, and when the Catholic father came to visit him he too had said that Hoagy was getting better through the grace and mercy of God. Then came the day Hoagy was allowed up and out of bed. He put on a nice warm robe and stood for a time beside the bed looking out of the window, watching the passing traffic, watching the neighbors peering as he was doing from behind slightly parted curtains. Then he thought, well, no good staying up here in this bedroom, I think I'll take a trip downstairs. Slowly he moved to the door and found quite some difficulty in opening it. He held the doorknob, but unaccountably he could not seem to work out how to open the door. Did you turn the doorknob? Did you push it or pull it? He stood there for quite a time trying to work out how to open the door. And at last by chance he turned the knob and the door opened so quickly that he nearly fell over backwards. He moved out to the well-carpeted corridor at the head of the stairs and put his foot on the top stair, on the next stair, and on the next. Suddenly he screamed. There was a shocking, shocking, terrible pain. He turned quickly, thinking that some assassin had stabbed him through the back. With that, he lost his balance and fell headlong down the stairs. The doctor, fortunately, was just coming in. He rushed to Hoagy, Mrs. McCogwasker rushed to Hoagy, and the maid rushed to him. They all met in a confused huddle at the foot of the stairs with Hoagy lying at their feet. Quickly the doctor bent down and knelt beside Hoagy. Quickly he tore open the robe and whipped out his stethoscope, applying the diaphragm end to Hoagy's chest. He reached for his doctor's bag and opened it in a flash. Inside this was a very thorough doctor. There was a hypodermic already prepared. Hoagy had a confused picture of the hypodermic plunging down, and there was a sudden prick of something sharp, and he knew no more. There was a peculiar buzzing noise, a strange noise, there was a swaying and bumping. Somewhere there was the faint murmur of voices. Hoagy just could not understand what was happening. Then there was a sudden sharp blast of a car horn. Hoagy opened his eyes and found that he was riding in an ambulance. He was strapped on a stretcher. Sitting on a bench beside him was his wife. She looked confoundedly uncomfortable, he thought, and then he fell to wondering why these ambulances had such uncomfortable seating for the friends or relatives of the patients. Something else attracted his attention. What a peculiar view it was, he thought. Going down a hill, one's feet are higher than one's head, and then going up the other side of the hill, well, it was like being on a seesaw. Things did look most peculiar. People in the streets outside looked avidly through the windows of the ambulance at traffic lights, hoping to satisfy morbid curiosity. And then there seemed to be queer colors around some of the people. He did not stop to wonder why. His thoughts were just floating in and out, going from one subject to another. Suddenly there was a clash and clatter in front of the ambulance, and the vehicle swooped into a dark tunnel, then came to quite an abrupt stop. While the ambulance was still rocking on its springs, the driver and attendant jumped out and were wrestling with the door. First they helped his wife out, then with much clatter and confusion they pulled out the stretcher and did something to it which made it rise up to about 4 feet so it could be pushed easily. One attendant muttered to Hoagy's wife, "Going there to that little office, you have to give every detail, insurances, age, nature of the illness, doctor, social security, everything. Then when you have done that you come up towards eyes." Quickly they grasped the two ends of the wheeled stretcher and pushed it up what appeared to be a loading ramp. In fact Hoagy had a similar sort of ramp in his factory. The lighting was poor, still they knew the way. They pushed the wheeled stretcher at quite a brisk pace, nodding greetings to nurses and interns as they passed. Hoagy lay back gazing humbly up, idly wondering about this and thinking about that. Then they came to an abrupt stop and he could see out of the corner of his eye one of the attendants jabbing a button, an elevator he supposed, and yes, he was right. Soon great doors opened and smartly the two ambulance men pushed the wheeled stretcher in. With a clash the doors closed and there was an upward movement. It seemed to go on for quite a time, but at last it stopped and the elevator rocked gently at the end of its cables. The doors opened and quite bright light assailed Hoagy's eyes. With some difficulty he focused on the scene before him. The nurses stationed just outside the elevators. "Emergency. Heart case. Where shall I put him?" asked one of the men. "Oh, him, wait a minute. Let us see, yes, here it is, intensive care unit," replied the nurse behind the desk. The ambulance men nodded and trundled the stretcher along a smooth passageway. There was muted talk, there was the clink of instruments, metal against glass, and the stretcher was turned sharply into an open doorway. The stretcher rolled to a stop. Hoagy looked about him with some confused interest. This seemed to be a queer sort of place. Quite a large room, and there were perhaps 12 beds in it. Hoagy was quite astonished to see that some of the patients were female and some were male, and he felt hot embarrassment rise as he thought that he was going to be put to bed with some women. Well, not exactly that, he thought, but in the same room as a bunch of women. He muttered something and the rear attendant bent down and said, "Eh?" Hoagy said, "I did not know they had wards with men and women together in them." The ambulance man laughed and replied, "Oh, this is intensive care unit, the men and women in here, they're too sick to bother about that." But there was movement again, low voices, unintelligible mutterings, and his stretcher was pushed forward. Then an ambulance man said, "There, you're up alongside the bed, can you slide yourself over?" Hoagie nodded his head sideways in negation, and the ambulance man said, "Okay, we'll do it for you, we're going to slide you off the side. The two are about the same height. Here goes." Hoagie felt himself moving and then there was a little jerk and he was more or less tipped sideways onto a hospital bed. The stretcher was removed and the two ambulance men left the intensive care unit. A nurse bent down and pulled up the sides of the bed so that Hoagie was just about in a cage although there was nothing across the top. "I'm not a dangerous wild animal, you know," he said. "Oh, don't be upset about this," replied the nurse. "We always put the side rails up in case the patient falls out, it saves a law case after." Then, as an afterthought, she said, "Okay, hold on, the doctor will be in to see you as soon as he can." Hoagie lay there. He did not know how much time passed. He looked up once and was dimly aware that his wife was looking down at him and then she seemed to disappear in the fog or something because all he saw was grey mist. Then he had feelings that people were about him. He felt that his pajamas are being unbuttoned. He could feel the chill of a stethoscope and he felt a prick in his arm after which he could dimly see tubes going from his arm up to something in the distance that he could not quite see. There was a strong constriction around the other upper arm and there was the sound of someone pumping. Then a man read out some figures, after which he said, "Umph." Then everything faded. Time stood still. There was not any time anymore. Very dimly Hoagie was aware of beds being moved, or perhaps it was wheeled stretchers. There were a lot of strange clinkings going on and smells which really attacked his nostrils. He could not understand what it was. Dimly he was aware of two people talking by his side, or was it above him? He could not decide which, but vaguely he heard things like, "Pacemaker? I don't know. Perhaps we'd better keep cardiac shock probes ready, don't like the look of it myself. Still, he'll probably pull round. Let's chance it anyway." The voices drifted off, vanishing like a vagrant breeze. Hoagie dozed again and he was partly aroused from his doze by, "Well, Mr. McCogwasker? How are you now? Feel all right? Mr. McCogwasker? Mr. McCogwasker? Do you hear me? Mr. McCogwasker, answer me, are you there, Mr. McCogwasker? Oh dear," the voice continued, "now I've got to take a blood sample and I can't get his blasted vein up." "Try a different tweake," said another voice. "It sometimes works, try a broadband one." There seemed to be somebody fiddling about at his side, messing about with his arm. There was an uncomfortable tightness around his upper arm. He had a feeling that his fingertips were going to burst and then there came a sharp sting and a voice exclaiming, I've got it this time, it's okey-doke." Time passed on and the ward became more silent. There were fewer people moving about. But somewhere outside a bell was striking, 1, 2, 3 and that was all. 3 o'clock, thought Hoagie. Wonder if it's afternoon or morning, I don't know what's happening. Oh well. It can't be helped. Voices again. Do you think he should have extreme unction, father? Asked a soft voice. Well, we shall have to consider it. The signs are not good, are they? We shall have to consider it. Hoagie tried to open his eyes. It was very strange. He seemed to have a black man standing above him. He wondered if he could be in heaven with a black saint or something, but then he realized that a hospital chaplain was bending over him. Time went on. The ward was lit dimly and from strange instruments or machines little lights flickered and went out or suddenly came on. Hoagie could not see clearly, there seemed to be yellow lights and then red and then some green lights too, and now and again there would be a white light. Somewhere outside the window a bird began to sing. Soon after there came the soft susurration of sandals or tennis shoes or something, he could not decide which. And several nurses and orderlies came into the large room. There was muttered talk, and then the night staff went off. The nurses and orderlies prowled among the beds, there were whispered requests for information to the patients and the fluttering of papers as records were turned over. At last a nurse came and looked down at Hoagie.
"Ah, you look a bit better this morning, Mr. McCogwaska," she said.
Hoagie wondered at that because the nurse had not seen him before. Of course she hadn't. He thought, "She's on the night staff."
The nurse looked down at him, then gave a little pat to the sheets covering him and moved on to the next patient. The light grew brighter. Daylight came. Out to the east the red orb was gradually climbing up until from just a small ellipse it rose up to a full round, red circle, and as the morning mists dissipated the sun shone bright and clear. There was renewed bustle in the intensive care unit. Some of the patients were having a wash, others were having feedings, perhaps through a vein. Hoagie in his turn was troubled. A nurse came along, took another sample of blood, and another nurse came and took his blood pressure. Then there came a doctor who said, "You're doing fine, Mr. McCogwaska. You'll soon be out and on your feet again." And then he was gone. Several hours, or was it several days, passed, and then Hoagie was able to sit up in his hospital bed. Two nurses came and said, "We're moving you out, Mr. McCogwaska. You are going into a private room, and you don't need intensive care anymore." "Do you have anything in the locker over there?"
"No," replied Hoagie, "I've only got what I am actually wearing now."
"All right, then, we're going to push you out now, hold on." And with that the nurses stepped on the wheel brakes to release them and carefully wheeled out Hoagie's bed with its attached intravenous apparatus, and he saw that as they neared the door another bed was being wheeled into the space he had occupied. Hoagie looked about him with the natural interest which comes to those who have to be in hospital or in any form of confinement. He saw it was a pleasant enough little room, a television extended from the ceiling, a bed and a window. At one side there was a closet and a wash basin. On a ledge by the closet there was the emergency call button, and he noted with interest that there was a control on the bed so that he could switch on the radio and choose a program or switch on the television and choose a program. The nurses moved the bed around to get it positioned exactly. Then they stamped their feet on the brake pedals and one nurse left the room while the other fiddled about for a time. Then she too went out. Hoagie lay there wondering what next. He was dimly aware of some sort of public address system coming from the corridor outside. He focused his attention on it for a bit and then decided that it was a call system because doctors were continually being asked to report to this or that floor. He noted that his own doctor's name came very frequently. As he listened, he heard his doctor's name mentioned again, and with some astonishment heard that the doctor was being paged to go to room so-and-so. Hoagie was in room so-and-so. He lay back and waited. About an hour later his doctor came in and said, "Well, Mr. McCogwaska, I hope you feel a lot better now, you look it. But you gave us quite a fright, you know." Hoagie looked up rather wanly and said, "I don't seem able to focus myself very well, doctor. I seem to be almost in a daze. I can't relate to things. For example, you were being paged to this room about an hour ago and it has taken me all this time to work out why that should be, and I decided that I must have been taken out of intensive care rather unexpectedly."
"Yes, that's right," said Dr. Robbins. "There has been a very serious accident and we have had to get a lot of patients brought in, some of them seriously, seriously hurt indeed, and you made such progress that we thought you would rather be in here on your own instead of being with a large group of men and women in intensive care." Hoagie laughed and said, "I asked a nurse why men and women were in the same ward, and she said that it was quite all right because all the people in intensive care were too sick to worry about that." "How right she was, how right she was," he said. At the head of Hoagie's bed, and fixed to the wall, or rather built into the wall, there were a number of strange devices. One was a blood testing device, another was oxygen supply, and there were various other things which had no meaning for Hoagie, but he was interested as the doctor unhooked the devices one by one and gave Hoagie a thorough check.
"You'll do, Mr. McCogwaska, you'll do," said the doctor. "Your wife is here. I think she would like to come in and see you. She has been very worried, you know." The doctor went out and there was silence for quite a time. Then Hoagie looked up and his wife was standing beside him, wringing her hands and looking the picture of misery. "The father is coming in to see you this afternoon, Hoagie," said his wife.
He thinks that you may need a little spiritual consolation. He tells me that you are very afraid to die, although please God you do not have to worry about that yet. The doctor tells me you will soon be home, but that you will have to rest for a while.